I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Mr. and Mrs. Mayor, whoever else is listening out there, this is Michael Veazey for the Amazing FBA podcast. Welcome to the show. We have today Emma Shermer-Tamir from marketingbyemma.com. Emma, I love this tagline, turns her curiosity into conversion spiking copy for Amazon and e-commerce sellers. Now, that's a bit of purple praise. I've got to dig into that curiosity word. But first of all, Emma, warm welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Michael. I'm really happy to be here today.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Now, it's obviously talking about listing optimization is something we do every 5 minutes, and rightly so, because it's so important. But I think the fact that you're a wordsmith / copywriting specialist is important, because sometimes we can get the idea, of course, it's extremely important. Someone like Daisy Pollard, for example, who I know we've talked to recently, is very focused on images. And obviously, image marketing is critical on Amazon. But I think the words can sometimes be seen as a sort of unimportant sort of second cousin. And we're here today to try and redress that balance. So first of all, my question is, why do words actually matter in an Amazon listing? Have you got any evidence that they actually matter?
So they matter for a whole variety of reasons. So, you know, obviously the words that you include are actually what's going to impact your indexing. So if you're not using the right keywords, then nobody's going to find you. But they also can really impact the bottom line of your business. And they do that in a way that lasts for as long as you're doing it. Obviously, you want to continue to be updating your listing to stay relevant. But by properly optimizing your listing, you can significantly impact the bottom line of your business. I was actually just speaking with a client recently, and they're not selling a seasonal product at all. We worked on their listing around June. At that time, they already had a really good conversion rate. They were sitting at 25.61%. After they updated their listing, their conversion rate increased and stayed increased to 34.77%. So a 37.5% increase for just that one thing that they did. That's not even talking about driving extra traffic. So that means that more people that you're already having come to your page, whether they're coming organically or through any of your other marketing efforts, more of those people are going to be purchasing. So in their case, more than one in every three people are going to click add to cart. That's awesome.
That's great. I love your precision. We were talking about before the show that I'm kind of a bit intimidatingly thorough as an interviewer. And that can sometimes be true, because I've been on podcasts where people go, basically, almost not, what do you do again? But they kind of like, yeah, so tell me a little bit about selling on Amazon. I'm like, dude, really? That's so general. But 37.5% or whatever it was to the second decimal place. I like it. But tell me about this.
You know, that's money. So
it's money. I guess you're right. I like your precision. I mean, that speaks to my... the heart of my, what do you call it? My pedantry, I suppose, to put it badly, or my thoroughness, to put it more politely. My wife would call it the former, I think. But you're right, these details do matter. But certainly that's not a subtle jump anyway. 25% to 37%, as you say, almost a quarter of people who visit the listing buy into a third. I mean, that's a lot of extra money. That's, as you say, pretty much pure profit, because they'll be paying for the traffic in one form or other, either because they've worked hard to launch their product and get an organic ranking, and or they're still advertising. So tell me about that optimization. Was that purely a words change, or was that words plus image change?
So that was everything, including reassessing the keywords that we were using. That was also creating an amazing core listing. I believe at that one, we had also upgraded to EBC at that time. And then we created some fantastic infographic text as well. And so what I mean by infographic text is not just letting those images stand on their own, but actually creating some text to help make sure that the message that you want to get across is getting across with every single picture that you have on your listing.
Yeah. And that's something I want to dive into, because I do think that infographic text, there's more to it than meets the eye. Because I was working with a client the other day, and actually he put so much text on his images. I said, look, you know, it's going to be unreadable on mobile. It doesn't look good. It's not making your point. There's an art to sort of boiling down your thoughts and then boiling them down and then boiling them down again. Right. I know one famous copywriter used to, as I understand it, charge 6 times as much for a headline as he would for the first few paragraphs of copy, which is interesting, right? Because the rewriting is so much work.
Yes, I would argue that the fewer the words, the more challenging the job. And just a point of thumb or rule of thumb for infographic text, if you're needing to zoom in to read the photo, then you probably are including too much text and you need to reel it back in. So you don't need to overload people with something. The text should really be supporting the message and helping to emphasize one or maybe a couple of key points. It shouldn't be bouncing all over the place and giving this like full text heavy. That's not appealing to anybody.
Absolutely. But a lot of people do it. So thank you for flagging that up. I think it's a very good point there. All right. So coming back to this key question of, do words matter? And it sounds like a dumb question, because obviously to some degree they do. But I mean, the $64,000 question, I suppose, is to what extent do the words matter compared to images? I mean, that's a kind of impossible to test unless you're going to do some really weird split tests where you write some really horrible listings with beautiful photographs. But I mean, in your experience, have you got some kind of numbers, or you don't have to give us to the second decimal place, but some kind of experience or case studies that indicate the power of words as distinct from photographs? For example, if you have split test different text but kept the photos the same.
So what I'm talking about with this particular client, actually, they didn't create any new images and they didn't upload any new images. Obviously, updating the EBC is going to impact things, but the images were the same. So that was really just looking at the power of words for that particular example. And you also want to be thinking about the different type of shoppers. So it's different people, words matter in different degrees, right? And so you want to make sure that whatever kind of shopper a person is, that you're going to be able to give them what they need to make a confident choice that your product is the correct product for their needs. And so, of course, there are going to be the casual visual shoppers, but maybe those visual shoppers also have a few key points that they really need to know about your product. And so they're going to have to go to your listing. And then if they get there and they're seeing weird stuff, you know, grammatical errors, incomplete information, or they just can't even find what they want, then that's giving them an opportunity to go elsewhere. And you really want to minimize that chance for somebody's mind to wander, to question, or to do anything that might make that competitor that's advertising in your listing a very tempting place to click.
A lot of sense. And again, one of the ways I know that makes sense is just my reaction to sort of what I call Chinese English. I suppose I'm trying to be polite with that sentence, but there's a lot of things on Amazon where the listing photos are average, but the English isn't grammatically wrong, but it's stylistically weird. For example, have happy time in toilet is not something any American or Brit I've ever spoken to would say, but you see stuff like that. The word happy appears an unnaturally large amount in a lot of Chinese written listings. And you just think that immediately what it says to me is, I'm an Amazon seller, or so I'm a different type of shopper, but I'm sure that a lot of people who shop a great deal, even if they don't sell on Amazon, have a sophistication as a consumer that is pretty high these days. And they immediately smell that kind of, that weird smell of like, this listing's just somehow not authentic. They don't really get me because I don't speak like that, and I just anyone I've ever met. And suddenly, for me, that means I'm immediately thinking, is this product going to fall apart? Is it going to possibly, if I'm very suspicious, might it get shipped from China instead of from a US warehouse, which has been an issue if I've read the right newspaper headlines. And also I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to probably pay $2 or $3 less. So you're quite right that just using the word happy time for me probably does 3 very damaging things immediately without me even thinking about the images. So you have a very good good point, because I was thinking, is this real? I thought, yeah, you know what? It is. And actually, as you say, bad spelling makes you wonder what other quality control they haven't performed, like seeing if their widget works, right?
Right. Well, and you're talking about this active moment where you're really aware of that. But so many times, that's just something that's happening in the back of our brains, and we don't even know how to put our finger on it. But it's just enough to make us take pause and think, you know, I just saw an article in the Washington Post about how there's a bunch of unsafe products on Amazon, and maybe this is one of them. And is this something that I want to bring into my household with pets and small children? And so, again, you just don't want to create any chance for there to be a question mark there, or mistrust, or anything that's going to make somebody have that pause that would make them think maybe your product isn't it.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it, so that you're almost in some ways treating the text, even if for somebody who's primarily a visual buyer, that the text needs to at the very least not offend them. And actually, there's quite a few ways you can offend: inaccurate information, missing information, if something's about weight, I guess you were saying, and I guess I was implying a sort of tone of voice, which is a bit more sophisticated. But again, it's not hard to get that right if you think about it, but sometimes people really obviously don't. So, okay, great. So some great reasons why we should be taking this seriously. In a second, I want to get into the tactics of how we create a great listing with regards to the word side of things. But first of all, I just want to dig a bit more into your background. So I'm very curious about the word curiosity. You were saying Emma turns a curiosity into conversion spiking copy. So tell me about the word curiosity. How does that impact your writing?
Yeah. So I think ever since I can remember myself, I have just been an incredibly curious person about anything and everything. Like, I'm definitely far more of a generalist than somebody that dives really deep into one particular topic. And I think that that's a great advantage when you're speaking about marketing, because we're helping people not only market so many different types of products and so many different categories, but also to so many different types of people. And so the more that you can really understand about generally how people work, but then more specifically how different people type of work, and that when they're trying to make certain types of decisions, that there might be particular details or things that they're taking into account, or maybe even totally illogical ways that humans function. And by being aware of that, you can do your best to be accommodating, or to use that to help you achieve your end goals.
So interesting what you're saying. I mean, I start to think, because I love watching, I've actually been watching a lot of Amazon Prime Video, partly because, you know, guess what? It's included with Prime, which is one of their best ever decisions. But also, they're doing a very good job of doing, I think, some pretty gripping TV. And what strikes me is that the idea of writing is in a visual medium, and obviously film is very visual, but so is internet marketing for e-commerce, specifically on Amazon, that writing can mean just words. But it can also mean the overall concept and direction of travel of a piece of work. In this case, the direction of travel of a listing. And you can start off with the big picture, which gets the click. And I guess that's a bit like a trailer in the Hollywood movie or something. And then you can take people through the idea of using it, and or the idea of being in a store, turning it upside down, pressing the buttons, you know, fiddling with it, whatever the journey is that you want to take them on. And then it always strikes me that the word writing is interesting, because it can imply the structure that you're creating or just the words. And presumably what you're talking about is a kind of blend of the two. Is that right?
Yes. And I love that analogy. If I might want to steal that from you.
Please
in the
do.
Future.
Can't copyright because... that. Yeah.
No, you're so right, because it's really creating this foundation, not only the foundation for your listing, but actually the foundation of your brand and how you're representing your product in the world, and maybe even all of the other types of marketing efforts that you're doing on top of that, because you want it to tell a story. So if you're creating, for example, a Facebook ad or a landing page that you're sending people to your listing, if there's something very disparate or weird going on, that's like, you know, your tone and colors and everything, even just the visual side is one thing. And then you get to the Amazon listing and it's totally different. Again, that's creating this sort of conflict between two things that can be really off-putting to people. And so you're wanting to make sure that there's this cohesive story and it all makes sense and it all fits together. And you want to make sure that somebody's in charge of that and that there is a clear direction and idea. And you're not just kind of saying, oh, okay, well, we'll do this and then we'll do this, and not thinking about how they're working holistically together.
Absolutely. And I think for entrepreneurs that I think people seem to go through three phases in my experience. One is the sort of fantasy stage where people talk about building a brand when they have precisely zero revenue and nobody's ever heard of them or their products. And at that point, the bad news is I don't think you have a brand. You just have an idea. But the next stage is those people that get very proudly say, yeah, I'm very focused on operations and they got, 50 different products out there. But they have, in some cases, for example, some guys in my mastermind who are very sharp and doing about $1 million a year or something in revenue. So they've got a lot of success and a lot of profitable products as well. But if they're split across four different brands, that starts to be a very messy situation. And if you're over-focused on implementation, important as that is, absolutely critical as it is, I think the next level on is to be the real CEO of a going concern, which has revenue and has operational abilities, maybe even operational excellence, and go, okay, now somebody's got to steer this ship or actually keep the thing together. Or I suppose a flotilla of ships is probably a better analogy, because otherwise you've got a bunch of people doing stuff, but leaves very conflicting signals to the market, which leaves people confused. And as you say, if they're confused, they might just go to your competitor who's next to the next click.
Yes. Well, and also if you're thinking about what your goals really are as a business, so whether that's to sell your brand one day, whether that's eventually to even expand off of Amazon, all of those things are going to be so much more challenging if you're not clear about all of that stuff. Because there are people that are successfully selling Amazon businesses that are, they're having this weird combination of products in their catalog. But it's going to be much more appealing if you have this brand equity that's more than just a few hero products. And if you can really do more with it, there's so much more that you can do. And the sooner you start, the easier it will be, the more natural it will be. And it may even lead the choices that you're making when you're figuring out what products you want to add to your catalog. It's similar, I think, in some ways. I was listening to a podcast yesterday about company culture. It was talking about how if you're not clear about the culture that you want to create in your business before you start hiring people and when you're making those first stage hires, then it's much more challenging to go back in and reverse engineer things. Whereas if you're clear about it and you're hiring the right people and you're doing all of these things very intentionally, then they can actually help you grow your culture. And I think the same can be said for a brand. And so even if you might not be in that brand place yet, if you're thoughtful about what it is that you're going to be eventually wanting to achieve, then it's going to help you make those smarter choices and be more thoughtful, but also creating something that has more value to it, whether it is eventually something that you're going to want to sell or that you're going to just want to continue to grow and see where it takes you.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. And I think the days when you could create a sort of grab bag of products that happen to make some sales right now and sell that as a business, I believe are going to be drawing to an end. Because if you look at the supply and demand of Amazon businesses for sale versus people buying them, they're going to be much more educated buyers these days. And they're going to have a much more choice. So just like Amazon listings themselves for individual product lines need to be more slick, more integrated, more congruent with the needs of a particular market, I think that's exactly true for Amazon businesses as well. And you see that market's growing as well. So yeah, I suppose what we're talking about here is very interesting. We've quickly gone from listing optimization to the brand as a whole. But I really think that what you put your finger on it is that you need to start off with intention of a sort of brand culture, if you like. And then your listings are, I suppose, individual reflections of that. And if you have a Facebook ad that goes to a listing, it needs to be the same. So in other words, you're more of a sort of brand architect in the end, I suppose, than just a copywriter from that point of view, right?
That's a very lofty thing to say. So but yes, I think that there's a lot to be said for that. And I think even more so, as third-party sellers come under scrutiny and people start to be, and customers in particular, start to be more suspicious about who they're purchasing from, having a brand, being able to have a website that's searchable and visible, even if you're not doing that much to it, but the people can go, oh, okay, these guys are real. It's not just some questionable person trying to sell me something that's going to fall apart and then disappear. That's important. And again, it just becomes much more challenging to do if you're not clear about what your goals are with your business and what it is that you're trying to create with your customers. Because even something as simple as let's say, coffee products. There's so many different types of coffee drinkers, and there's so many different ways that you could build a brand around coffee. And so making sure that you're clear about where you fit into that is so important. Otherwise, you're just one of the other, 20,000 hand grind coffee.
Yeah, absolutely. And not a place you want to be. Yeah. And in a way, I just think what I see, because I've been selling on Amazon, so just over 5 years, doing a podcast about it for 4.5 or something now, coming on for that. And the trend I see is actually just more good business practice goes from desirable to necessary to absolutely have to have it. But it's still the same thing, which is make sure you have some kind of idea of who on earth you're selling to. Make sure you have some consistency in your tone of voice. Make sure you have consistency in even the products that you have. I mean, or even sets of brands. I mean, if you're thinking even bigger picture, it's the same thing. Have you got four different brands, one of which is like coffee type products, another one is surfboards, another one is aids for the elderly. It's going to be really hard to bundle that up as an attractive package to somebody else. Whereas, even different brands can have some similarity in some kind of customer crossover. So in the end, it comes down to good old fashioned business things like coherence and coordination and having consistency and having some kind of core customer at the center of it all, rather than just grabbing products. So it's kind of nothing new, but it's interesting that the same topics come up again and again each year, but they get more and more important. So I think in some ways this is new, but it's just, as you said, the trust issue now is something we have to take very seriously, because there's a newspaper in the UK called the Daily Mail, which is not probably the most intellectually sharp paper out there, but it kind of reflects a certain kind of consumer that's maybe kind of middle brow. It's kind of average for a lot of consumers. Maybe, I don't know, I wouldn't say too much here, but let's say it's not that intellectual, but people take it quite seriously and they get quite emotional about it. And it often will influence the sort of governments that we have, for example. So it's quite an influential paper. And there was a big headline that I picked up in a hotel I was staying in over the New Year with my wife. And it was screaming about the fact that Amazon reviews are being manipulated now. Like, it's 3.5 years out of date, in my opinion, maybe four, but it's becoming headline news for average readers in a national paper. So that shows me that Amazon's got a big trust issue now relative to what it had before. And as third-party sellers, you're quite right, we have that. So I think even gaining trust is in itself a huge issue. What are your thoughts around the trust side of things?
And that just goes up depending upon the category you're in. So if you are selling something topical, like anything from cosmetics to just anything that people are putting on their skin, if you're selling something that's going to be ingested, whether by a human or by an animal, those sorts of products, you need to be even more vigilant about double, triple, quadruple checking everything, because you're wanting to make sure that people know that you're a reputable brand, that you care about your customers. It's our website, we host it on Shopify. And they have all these little cards that it'll give you when you log in. And one of the things that it'll tell you is different ways that you can facilitate higher conversion rates. And they use, I wish I took a screenshot of them, but there's one that talks about having a guarantee and how impactful that is. And people, I think with Amazon, they think, okay, well, including a guarantee, everybody knows that if you're Prime, you automatically get a 30-day guarantee. So what's the point of reiterating that? But what a guarantee does is a guarantee really helps you to communicate to your customers that you care about them, that you care about their experience, and that you also really stand behind your product, because you're saying, you know what, if this doesn't work, I'm going to absorb all the costs. I want you to be happy. And our only goal is to make sure that this product is exactly what you're looking for. And another way that you can do that is, I think that people get really eager to want to sell to everybody. Yes, this is the best product. It fixes anything and everything that you could possibly need to fix. And that can maybe sound like a good idea, but it rarely is. Because why would you want a bunch of people that shouldn't be purchasing your product purchasing it? Number one, it's creating more work for you. Number two, when it comes to your Amazon account, the higher your return rate is, you're going to start to run into problems. And number three, it's just creating a really bad experience for clients that are thinking that this product is the correct choice for them, and it's not. People shop online for convenience, and returning things is getting easier and easier also. But it's still, I would much rather really want and like to keep what it is that I purchase things. I don't purchase them hoping that they're not going to work. I purchase them because I have a particular need and I want to solve that need. And I want to stop thinking about needing to tell myself, okay, I need to buy a microphone. I just want to love the microphone I have. And I want to trust it and I want to rely on it. And I want to buy it from a company that if I have a problem, they're going to be available and they want to help me fix that problem.
Absolutely. And I was reminded, by the way, first thing to say is, you said everyone knows if you're Prime, you get a 30-day guarantee. I'm ashamed to say, as somebody who's been selling on Amazon, talking about Amazon, interviewing people for Amazon for ages, and I have a Prime account and I have for years, I had no idea about that. Now, maybe
well,
it doesn't
in the
apply
UK,
in the UK.
I'm not sure what
but
that
you know,
policy
I'm not sure
is.
If it's right or not, but the point is, I'm not sure. And I should know everything about Amazon. Obviously, there's more to learn every day, but that's pretty basic. So I'm, apart from being slightly ashamed, like I didn't know. So it's worth pointing out what you and I think is the blinding obvious to the consumer may be completely news. And it certainly would have been to me. So I think you just put your finger on something very basic and very important, like never assume that people know the most important basics. And if it's going to help conversion and you articulate it and your competition doesn't, you win, right? So that's a very nice little nugget there. The other thing is that all things to all people, I couldn't agree more. And actually, we had a case in the 10K Collective that somebody's doing very, very well, doing over £1 million a year. Conversion rate is 30%. Quite nice product. It results in all ways, very profitable as well. But the fly in the ointment was he's getting some negative reviews because this product was pretty effective at doing its job. But its real selling point was it was environmentally friendly, but it wasn't as brutally effective as some of the competition. And we simply said to him, look, it's very simple. You need to say, this is all about the environment, and you need to put people off who want brutally effective and it's going to, you know, poison your children, your dog or whatever.
Right.
And you need to actively attract the people who are scared, you know, witless of poisoning the dog. And you just play on that. And guess what? He comes back. He's done his homework because these guys implement stuff. He comes back the next month. The conversion rate's gone to 40%. And not only that, I'm sure that he will get fewer rude reviews Negative review prevention is absolutely critical to keeping your conversion rate. I think it's the number one thing we should all be focused on, because you get one or two negative reviews, the average stars drops from 4.5 to 4. We all know roughly that cuts the conversion rate, whatever it is, 30%, 40%, even 50% in my experience. So that was absolute vindication of what you just said. Trying to be all things to all people is dangerous, actively dangerous, in my opinion, in a place as consumer-led as Amazon. So
yes.
I could not agree more. Again, it used to be it was merely desirable. Now I think it's actively critical. So once again, that there's nothing new under the sun, like the old marketing principles that people developed for catalog shopping back in the 1890s or whatever with the railroad in the States. I think they still apply, which is always what amazes me.
I agree so much. And even more so now that choice is just, you know, it explodes more and more every day. So all of these finer points and the customer's ability to really have a set criteria that they're able to say, you know, like in the case of effective versus ingredients, one of the few things that jump to my mind are like deodorant. If somebody really wants natural deodorant, it's more important to them that it doesn't have aluminum and some of these other really potentially carcinogenic ingredients. And so they're willing to have to reapply throughout the day, because they understand that the reality is that even the best natural deodorant probably isn't going to keep you, you know, stink-free for 24 hours. And so that's the most important thing to you. If you need something that you can go out for 24 hours and sweat your bum off, then that might be more important to you than the ingredients. Then you can go make that choice. But you also don't want somebody that's their most important deciding factor to be purchasing your product and then to say, well, they told me that this is going to be super long lasting and it's not. Instead, I know I'm primed as a customer to understand the health of my body or my husband's body or whoever you're purchasing for it, and their longevity is worth it to me to have to reapply throughout the day.
Absolutely. So it comes down to not that nothing's important to anyone, but I guess it comes down to, I guess it would be a value hierarchy in psychological terms. So you can only have one thing that is more important than everything else. And maybe it's health rather than being, as you say, stink-free. Maybe for other people, they don't care about that so much, but they somewhat care, but they really, really care about not being smelly when they've been on the subway / tube all day. And in which case they need to buy a different product and you need to say to them, thanks very much, goodbye. So This is great stuff. In our next episode, we're going to talk about the tactics of actually the nitty-gritty of how to create a great listing, the sort of step-by-step stuff. This is really, really good. I know that, Emma, you've created a wonderful free download that talks about, you know, it's quite a deep dive into how to create a listing, including looking at your customer avatar, which we're also going to be exploring another episode, how your product fits into the space, which is very important. And then, of course, if you're, you know, even if you're developing a brand, as we've talked about already, you know, where you should be going, even in terms of your product choices and how that ties in with your brand identity. So there's a lot of good stuff in that. And this is down at amazingfba.com/deepdive, DEEPDIVE. So hopefully we can all spell that. AmazingFBA, F for Freddie, B for Bertie, A for Alpha.com /deepdive. Emma, anything you want to say about that download? It sounds really, really good.
Yeah, so it's a lot of questions. So going back to that topic of curiosity, the more open-minded you can be and the more curious you can be about people and about things and about this world, the better off and the more opportunity that you're going to find for yourself. And so this is really an exercise in taking a step back and asking yourself these questions. And it's helpful to do whether you're just starting off and you don't even know what product you're going to be selling. And then you can be very intentional about those choices. But it can also be a great practice to do if you're 3, 4, 10 years in business and you're maybe lacking some of that clarity of where are we going? What is the unifying theme here? Where should we be going? And those are questions that are also going to evolve over time. So it can be a worthwhile exercise to do. You know, right now it's the beginning of the year. It's a great time to sort of do a reflection of what it is that you're trying to accomplish with your business more globally, and then more specifically with the products you're selling to your customers and the experience that you're hoping to give them.
I think generally speaking, it's possible that newbies who have no revenue yet spend a bit too much time building castles in the air. But I remember somebody, I can't remember who said it, but they said something like, there's nothing wrong with building castles in the air. Just make sure you put the foundations underneath them. And there is something in that. But I certainly think for those who are in motion and doing good revenue, that they don't spend enough time out of their business reflecting on where they want to go. Because in the end, as a CEO, even if it's you and one VA and maybe your wife or son or whatever it may be, that is your main job, actually. And I think most people don't spend enough time on that, in my experience, which is why I find that the masterminds produce great results for people, because they're taking one day a month out of a business, which is quite a serious commitment. I mean, that's maybe 1/20th of your working month, and they see great results. And I do really believe that taking time out from your business to reflect on it is absolutely critical. So I'm 100% endorse the need to do that.
It's so easy to get caught up in being busy. Yeah. And to just let things control and dictate where you're going rather than being the one that's steering the ship, bringing it back to your ship analogy from earlier. And that's something that I've been reflecting on a lot, both in last year and this year. And we recently got a team of mentors, and it has just been totally a game changer for our business. So very similar to what you're talking about, where you're with your mastermind, where we're, you know, monthly meeting with them and reflecting beforehand and strategizing and talking through things and getting other people's perspectives. And it's just so valuable to not only be thoughtful about that, but to also really have dialogue with other people and people that are knowledgeable, not just random people that might not understand business or the things that you should understand in order to be in a position of giving insight and advice.
Absolutely. But I mean, I think that you just put your finger on something else, which is if you don't get knowledgeable people causing you to reflect upon what you're doing, you will end up with somebody in your family causing you to reflect on it, but they don't necessarily understand. So they cause you to reflect and doubt rather than reflect and then come to a new conclusion in a helpful way, in my experience. I mean, wives and husbands are famous for that. I mean, if they're looking at you trying to build a business, if they don't understand where you're going and you feel probably rightly, you don't understand where you're going either, particularly for startups I'm talking about here, it can very easily kill it, because quite rightly, they're going, what the hell are you spending all this time and money on? Whereas if you have a plan and you can articulate that, then not only can you do a reality check for yourself that you are investing time and money in a way that has at least a decent chance of paying off, but you can also bring in other stakeholders, which the most important of which is probably your partner. I mean, you know, you've got to sell the idea that you're busy at the evenings and weekends when you start off, right? So I do think there are so many hidden downsides to not having a clear strategy, actually. And that's the most obvious and the most glaring when you have startups. But then further down the line, you're so busy, sometimes you don't notice that you don't have a strategy until you start losing market share, you start losing the price premium that you once had. And you look at competition and you look at their listings, and that's normally the wake-up call, right? You go, you know what, these guys have got a really lovely, consistent-looking storefront. They have a really lovely website. Their advertising, if you've seen it, ties in. And then you suddenly realize, yeah, damn, you know what, it's time to up the game. So thank you for giving some big picture stuff. So I thought this was going to be more about the tactics of creating a great listing. You know what? It's been very, very important sort of big picture stuff. So I think we need to reflect on that. So that's been great stuff, Emma, and look forward to looking at the tactics of the ABC. How do we get down to the nuts and bolts as well?
Me too. I look forward to digging into the nitty gritty.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.